For weeks we've been hearing about the Param Satyam. What does Param Satyam mean?
Supreme Absolute Truth.
Yes. And that is directly Krishna. And just last week we've heard how wonderful the Bhagavatam is. Why? Because it is actually Krishna. And what is the power of hearing this Bhagavatam? It removes all the miseries of the living entity. Krishna Paramapuruṣe, and then Bhakti Rupadyate Pungsan, Bhakti, by hearing the Bhagavatam, which is everything is in relationship with Krishna. Bhakti sprouts up within the heart of the living entity. And shoka, moha, vyapaha, lamentation, illusion, and bhaya, fear, they are destroyed. Anartha, upasamam, shakshad. Because the living entities are attached to things that actually give them misery. Then, by hearing the Bhagavatam, lokasya ajanato vidvam chakre satvita samuta, that Srila Vyasadeva compiled this wonderful Vedic literature, the Srimad Bhagavatam, to give everyone the association of Krishna. So this Krishna has been described again as the absolute truth, the Param Satyam, in the Bhagavad Gita, Mata Parataram Na Anyat, Sutre Manigana Iva, that everything rests upon him, just as pearls are strung on a thread. Aham Savasya Prabhavo Matak Savam Pavartate, that everything emanates from him. He's so powerful, yet he's a person. And even those who are already Atmaram, who are self-satisfied, self-realized, still they're attracted to hear about Krishna, about Hari. Itam Gunahari. That everyone is attracted to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we've heard about him, how he expands into the Purusha avatars, one after another. And now, at this time, we're going to meet that Supreme Personality of Godhead. And how you meet someone is very important. The first introductions are very important, because that sticks within one's mind. So when we meet someone for the first time, say if we're going to go for a job interview or this or that, we're always on our best behavior, how we introduce ourselves. So it's very interesting to note very carefully how we, even though we are fallen conditioned souls, become introduced to Krishna. How Krishna, through Srila Vyasadeva and through Sudha Goswami, and the Guru Parampara in that way, how Krishna chooses to introduce himself. Say if we are meeting someone for the first time who we wish to show who we really are, we'll put on our best clothes. If we have any hair, we'll part it carefully. We'll wash behind our ears, everything. We'll make ourselves very clean. We'll speak in our best accents. Yes, that's what the word is. We won't allow any accidents to occur as best as we are able. We'll walk tall. We'll have a spring in our step. We want people to understand, this is what I am. But how does Krishna introduce himself? Text 1. And if Krishna allows, we shall read the entire, not text 1, rather we already got up to text 12 in this chapter. But text 13 and 14 No, text 12 starts describing, or sutta starts describing, the topic changes and it turns to Krishna. Vakshe, Krishna katoldayam. These topics will give rise to Krishna Katha, that which he is going to speak. So Sutta Goswami in text 12 addresses the rishis headed by Shaunaka Rishi. And he says, Sutta says, now I shall begin the transcendental narration of the Lord Sri Krishna and topics amongst the birth, activities, and deliverance of King Pariksit, the sage amongst kings, as well as topics of the renunciation of the worldly order by the sons of Pandu. So from this chapter, from this second part of chapter 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, we shall hear directly about Krishna. And then 12 is, what's the topic of chapter 12 in the first canto? The birth of Maharaj Pariksit. And that, so that's the birth of Pariksit. And these, of course, are answers to the questions that Shaunaka Rishi has asked about in the beginning of chapter 4. So here, the rest of this canto are answering those questions. And then the topics of Maharaj Pariksit in 17 and 16 and 17, it will turn to his activities after he's been crowned the king. And then 18 and 19 will turn to the circumstances by which he has come to hear the Bhagavatam and renounce his kingdom. And that will also include meeting Srila Sukadev Goswami. And 13 and 14 and 15, those chapters have to do with the renunciation of the Pandavas and the Kurus, including Dhritarashtra and Vidura, their renunciation from this world. And it will also discuss in chapter 13, 14, the disappearance of Krishna from this world, very briefly. Prabhupada's purport. So Sutta is about to speak, and we're in Vakshe, Krishna, Katodayam. This will give rise to topics about Krishna. Listen to Prabhupada's purport. Lord Krishna is so kind to the fallen souls. Is that an important point right there? In some senses, that's the most important point for fallen souls. That we need Krishna's kindness upon us. And we need to know that Krishna is kind to us. Why? Why do we need to be very deeply, deeply convinced of Krishna's kindness upon us and his disposition towards us? Yes? Well, how can we surrender to someone who doesn't have our interest at heart? Very difficult. And also Krishna himself says in the Bhagavad Gita that we need, that if you want to be peaceful in this world, one has to know suridam savabhutanam, that Krishna is the surit, or the friend of every living entity. Very, not only friend, but very, very heart-to-heart close friend. Indeed, he is within the heart of every living entity. And he's so kind that he personally incarnates himself among the different kinds of living entities and takes part with them in daily activities. Any historical fact, old or new, which has a connection with the activities of the Lord is to be understood as a transcendental narration of the Lord. Without Krishna, all the supplementary literatures like the Puranas and Mahabharata are simply stories or historical facts. But with Krishna, they become transcendental. Everything connected with Krishna is transcendental. And when we hear of them, we at once become transcendentally related with the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam is also a Purana, but the special significance of this Purana is that the activities of the Lord are central and not just supplementary historical facts. Krishna is the central point of this Purana, of this Bhagavat Purana, of Srimad Bhagavatam. There is a class of less intelligent devotees of the Bhagavat Purana. Interesting. They're devotees, and not only are they devotees, but they're devotees of the Bhagavat Purana. But they desire to relish at once the activities of the Lord narrated in the 10th canto without first understanding the primary cantos. They are under the false impression that the other cantos are not concerned with Krishna. But every part of the Bhagavatam is concerned with Krishna. How he does this, how he does that, it is only concerned with Krishna. And thus more foolishly than intelligently they take to the reading of the 10th canto. These readers are specifically told herein that the other cantos of the Bhagavatam are as important as the 10th canto. No one should try to go into the matters of the 10th canto without having thoroughly understood the purport of the other 9 cantos. Now the narration shall begin. When the respective warriors of both camps, namely the Kauravas and the Pandavas, were killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and the dead warriors obtained their deserved destinations. When I think of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, I stop complaining. How many millions of people were killed? Millions and millions. And not only that, in this world, every person is going to be killed. So anyone who wants to criticize God, they can start from that point. But of course, there is deep meaning behind all these things. Very deep meaning. And now, we're going to hear of what happened, an occurrence after the Battle of Kurukshetra. So, all the Kauravas and the Pandavas were killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and the dead warriors obtained their deserved destinations. And when the son of Dhritarashtra fell down lamenting, his spine broken, his thigh broken, being beaten by the club of Bhimasena. Who is that? Who is that who was beaten and broken? Duryodhan. Then at that time, the son of Dronacharya, Asatam, beheaded the 5 sleeping sons of Draupadi and delivered them as a prize to his master. Previously, everyone born in India knew all these pastimes inside and outside. Why? Because they heard it from who? Their grandparents, exactly. And now, everyone in India knows all these pastimes because they've seen the videos. That's how things have changed. So he foolishly, this Asatama, brought the heads. When he killed them, he thought they were the actual Pandavas. And he was going to bring them to Duryodhan to show that now the Pandavas, at last, they have been killed. But they were the sons of Draupadi and the Pandavas. And Duryodhan, however, disapproved of this heinous, this terrible act, and he was not pleased in the least, because this meant the end of the Kuru dynasty completely. And after all, he was a Kuru. So this Aswatthama had done something horrible, this completely unchatriya-like, unbrahminical, and of course he was a Brahmin. Horrible, horrible, completely disgraceful. Here is Prabhupada's purport. Transcendental topics of the activities of Lord Sri Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam begin from the end of the battle of Kurukshetra. When the Lord Himself spoke about Himself in the Bhagavad Gita, therefore both the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are transcendental topics of Lord Krishna. The Gita is Krishna Katha, or topics of Krishna, because it is spoken by the Lord. And the Bhagavatam is also Krishna Katha because it is spoken about the Lord. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted everyone to be informed of both Krishna Kathas by his order. What's the verse? Agya, by my order. Amar Agya, by my order. You become guru, and what does it mean? It means to preach Krishna Katha. Lord Sri Chaitanya, Lord Krishna Chaitanya is Krishna himself in the garb of a devotee of Krishna, and therefore the versions of both Lord Krishna and Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are identical. Lord Chaitanya desired that all who are born in India seriously understand such Krishna Kathas, and then, after full realization, preach the transcendental message to everyone in all parts of the world. That will bring about the desired peace and prosperity of the stricken world. So after her five children had been cruelly beheaded in their sleep by this Aswatthama, Draupadi, the mother of the five children of the Pandavas, after hearing of the massacre of her sons, began to cry in distress with eyes full of tears. Trying to pacify her in her great loss, Arjun spoke to her thus. Now, Draupadi was a very heavy Kshatriya Mataji. She was known as Panchali. She was very, very strong, and she had a Kshatriya spirit. So Arjuna wished to pacify her. So this is what he said. O gentle lady, when I present you with the head of that Brahmana, after beheading him with the arrows from my Gandiva bow, I shall then wipe the tears from your eyes and pacify you. In other words, I won't try to tell you some philosophy at this point. I won't say I'm going to, don't worry about a thing. You can stop crying now because I'm going to kill him. No, when I cut off his head and I bring you his head, then after burning your son's bodies, you can take your bath standing on his head. Now there's something in that, I'm not exactly sure what the ritual is involved, but in other words, the basic principle is after the children are killed, after the cremations are performed, then one bathes. And then one's lamentations are there, certainly. The rituals are performed, but don't think until this revenge to Aswatthama has been enacted, we won't even think about you stopping your crying. This is how Arjuna was pacifying her. Because naturally, when one's family members are killed in such a way, naturally, revenge and justice even, perhaps a better word, a more proper word, is sought after. So that person has been such an aggressor. Look what he did, this aggressor. And there is no sin in killing him at all. So I will behead him and bring that head to you for your satisfaction, so you can see that justice has been done. Text 17. Arjun, who is guided by the infallible Lord as friend and driver, So this is after the battle of Kurukshetra, and Krishna was still the chariot driver of Arjuna. So after Arjuna thus satisfied the dear lady by such statements, then he dressed in armor and armed himself with furious weapons, and getting into his chariot, he set out to follow Asatthama, the son of his martial teacher. Asatthama, the murderer of the princes, seeing from a great distance Arjuna coming at him with great speed, fled in his chariot, panic-stricken, because he knew Arjuna's power, and he knew why Arjuna was chasing him. He knew what he had done, and he was terrified because he knew that Arjuna was coming to kill him. And everyone, when it comes to it, is terrified of death. Just to save his life, he fled in his chariot as Brahma fled in fear of Lord Shiva. So Prabhupada's purport explains some circumstances that explain the analogy. How Brahma even, Asatthama, was powerful. He was born with some decorations, a jewel upon him. From his birth, he was such an amazing birth. But yet, he was terrified with Arjuna chasing him as Brahma, after he had done something improper. He was terrified by Lord Shiva's anger, because Lord Shiva was still more powerful. When the son of the Brahmana, Asatthama, so in these verses, Prabhupada points out in the purport, so many times he is called, this Asatthama is called Dvija Bandhu or Brahma Bandhu. He's a friend of a Brahmana. He's born of a Brahmana. He's born of the twice born, but he is not referred to as a Brahmana. Because a Brahmana is one who has the guna and karma of a Brahmana, the qualities and actions of a Brahmana. And Asatthama was acting as a Kshatriya in the battle, but yet, when he did this horrible act, he was not at all considered a Brahmana, not to be given the respect of a Brahmana, even by the words of Sutta here. So he fled, but as he was fleeing, his horses became tired. And that would mean that there was no question of him escaping Arjuna. So he thought that there was no alternative for protection outside of his using the ultimate weapon, the Brahmastra, which in this verse, it is called the Brahma Shiro. Shiro means what? The head. So this is the head of Brahma, the topmost weapon, the greatest, topmost of great weapons, the Brahmastra, which is comparable to a nuclear weapon. It is unstoppable. Yeah, he is called Atmaja, Dvija Atmaja, born of the twice, the son of the twice born or of a Brahmana. So, since his life was in danger, he touched water in sanctity and concentrated upon chanting of the hymns for throwing nuclear weapons, although he did not know how to withdraw such weapons. So for him to properly use this Brahmastra, it was required that he knew the complete science, which was not only how to throw it, but also how to withdraw it. And he did not know that. He only knew how to cast it. So he said his mantras, he purified himself, said the mantras, and suddenly that Brahmastra started heading towards Arjuna. Text 21. Thereupon, a glaring light spread in all directions. It was so fierce that Arjuna thought his own life in danger, and so he began to address Lord Sri Krishna. Arjuna Uvacha, Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho, Bhaktanam, Abhayankara. Krishna, Krishna, mighty on Krishna, Bhaktanam, Abhayankara. You are the one who eradicates all the fear of your devotee, of your bhakta. We've seen, although we didn't emphasize it here, Krishna for the first time. And what was he doing? It slipped past us. But what was he doing? Arjuna was chasing this rascal, Aswatthama. And what was Krishna doing? He was driving his chariot. This is the first time we get to see Krishna in the Bhagavatam. This Paramapurusha universes emanate from the pores of his skin. He enters into the universes as different avatars, as Garbhadakshai Vishnu. He enters in every atom. Mama Tejo Angsa Sambhava. This all-powerful great Lord that we heard was a person introduces himself as the driver of his devotee's chariot, the servant of his devotee. But when he drives the chariot of Arjuna, he doesn't in any way become demeaned or lessened from being the supreme all-powerful personality of Godhead. And this is something that we will be introduced again and again as we hear of the different incarnations of the Lord. When the Lord is there, whatever form he's in, he's always the Lord. And this point that he's always the Lord, always the always transcendental, always beyond, always all-powerful, it's especially important to fully realize this and understand this when we come to the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. Because Krishna will dance with gopis, he'll steal butter. But whatever Krishna does, it is not as the same as if we were doing such a thing. He's always the all-powerful Lord, always transcendental. So therefore Prabhupada said, don't jump to the 10th canto. Don't jump to the 10th canto. First, get all the conceptions in place properly. Who is Krishna? What is the nature of his lila, his activities? Radha Krishna Pranaya Ladini Shakti Asma. They're all, everything is going on by the internal energy of the Lord. So Krishna introduces himself as the servant of his devotee, but always in the position of the Lord and capable of removing the fear of his devotee. Arjuna said, O my Lord Krishna, you are the almighty personality of Godhead. There is no limit to your different energies. If we are in a fearful situation, and this is the deepest thing in the conditioned soul, what are the four characteristics of a conditioned soul? Yes. And out of all these four, the deepest one is this defending, which is based on fearing, because there is no need to defend unless one is afraid. If one has nothing to lose, there is no question of defending. So fear is in the heart of every conditioned soul. Deep, deep fear. Because there is no limit to your different energies. Therefore, only you are competent to instill fearlessness in the hearts of your devotees. So Arjuna is speaking this point that is required for us to realize so that we can give ourselves to Krishna and become his devotee. Everyone in the flames of material miseries can find the path of liberation in you only. We'll read from within Prabhupada's purport. Krishna is almighty and is especially the cause of fearlessness for the devotees. A devotee of the Lord is always fearless because of the protection given by the Lord. Material existence is something like a blazing fire in the forest, which can be extinguished by the mercy of Lord Sri Krishna. The spiritual master is the mercy representative of the Lord. Therefore, a person burning in the flames of material existence may receive the rains of mercy of the Lord through the transparent medium of the self-realized spiritual master. The spiritual master, by his words, can penetrate into the heart of the suffering person and inject knowledge transcendental, which alone can extinguish the fire of material existence. That knowledge, Krishna Surya Sammayahaya Andhakar, it removes the darkness of ignorance, thinking that we're the body, thinking that we're alone and unprotected, removing the illusion that we have other protectors other than Krishna. Arjun continues, and these verses 22 through 25 are very important. This is the predicament of every living entity. Tam adya purushat shakshat ishvara prakriti para. Kunti Devi will say almost the exact same thing, and we'll hear that in the next chapter. Mayam vyudhas chikshaktya kaivalya stita atmani. You are the original personality of Godhead. Purusha, Shakshad, Adya, you are the original Purusha, Shakshad. This is you. And there he's driving the chariot of Arjuna. Ishwara, Prakriti, Para, you're the supreme controller of this Prakriti, this material world. You are the original personality of Godhead who expands himself all over the creation and is transcendental to material energy. You have cast away the effects of the material energy by dint of your spiritual potency, this vyudhasya, the chit-shakti, the internal energy. You are always situated in eternal bliss and transcendental knowledge. And yet, he is driving Arjuna's chariot. What impels this Purusha Adya, Purusha Prakriti, Prakriti Para, Ishwara Prakriti, what impels him? What is in him that causes him to drive the chariot of his devotee? This, we'll really get a glimpse of this in the 11th chapter, at the end of the 11th chapter. And it's very interesting how in these chapters, 7 through 11, this is the first time that we see Krishna in action, performing his activities. And it's also the last time that we will see him until Canto 10. In the beginning of Canto 3, in the first four chapters, Uddhava will summarize Krishna's lila when speaking to Vidura. But it's not actually, we will hear about Krishna, but here we're actually seeing Krishna doing this and doing that. So this is a very special section of the Bhagavatam. And then we won't see Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, other than that small segment in 3, until Canto 10. But here is a special, all-attractive taste that we're going to get. A glimpse of who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. The Supreme Personality. He has characteristics. He's a person. Individuality. And we should try to understand what he has in his person, in his individuality, in his nature, that makes him show himself for the first time, introduce himself, driving the chariot of his devotee Arjuna. You are always situated in eternal bliss and transcendental knowledge. It's not that he couldn't get another job. We'll read just from the beginning of Prabhupada's purport. So many important instructions here. The Lord states, this is the 23 in the Bhagavad Gita, that one who surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Lord can get released from the clutches of nescience. Krishna is just like the sun, and Maya or material existence is just like darkness. Whenever there is light or the sun, darkness or ignorance, it once vanishes. And the best means to get out of the world of ignorance is suggested here. What's the suggestion? You have cast away the effects of the material energy by dint of your spiritual potency. What is the best means to get out of Maya? Surrender to Krishna. What does it mean to surrender to Krishna? It means to give up the shelter of the external energy and surrender to Krishna's serving energy, the internal energy. So by the potency of Krishna's chit-shakti, or internal energy, Maya will be vanquished. 24, more of Arjuna's words. And yet, though you are beyond the purview of the material energy, you execute the four principles of liberation characterized by religion and so on for the ultimate good of the conditioned souls. Prabhupada's purport. The personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, descends on the manifested world without being influenced by the material modes of nature. He is eternally beyond the material manifestations. He descends out of his causeless mercy only to reclaim the fallen souls who are captivated by the illusory energy. They are attacked by the material energy, and they want to enjoy her under false pretexts. Although in essence, the living entity is unable to enjoy. Again, that verse, Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhunkte Prakriti Jani Ha Karanam Guna Sangasya Sarasat Juna Janmasu. Because of that tendency to enjoy, we suffer birth and death and birth and death and birth and death. And we are placed Karanam Guna Sangasya under the three modes of material nature. One is eternally the servitor of the Lord, and when he forgets this position, he thinks of enjoying the material world. But factually, he is an illusion. He can't enjoy. We can't enjoy. The Lord descends to eradicate this false sense of enjoyment and thus reclaim conditioned souls back to Godhead. That is the all-merciful nature of the Lord for fallen souls. And then Arjuna says, very interestingly, thus you descend as an incarnation to remove the burden of the world and to benefit your friends. And he happens to be one of those friends in a very difficult position because a brahmastra is coming right towards him. You've become to remove the burden of the world and to benefit your friends, especially those who are exclusive devotees and are wrapped in meditation upon you. Arjuna was one of those friends. And now, after glorifying Krishna in that way, he'll ask for help. O Lord of Lords, how is it that this dangerous effulgence is spreading all around? Where does it come from? I do not understand it. A short comment by... No, this is a long comment by Srila Jiva Goswami on 1725, and one by Srila Swami. I'll just read the comment by Srila Swami, and then possibly later we'll read what Jiva Goswami says. On 1725... Srila Sridhar Swami says, Lord Krishna does not need to personally appear in this world to remove the earth's burden, for he can do that simply by wishing it to be done. The actual reason for the Lord's appearance is given in this verse. You descend to benefit your friends, especially those who are your exclusive devotees and are wrapped in meditation upon you. 27. Now we're going to hear Krishna's first words. Is he going to speak some very, very big philosophy? After all, he is the greatest of philosophers. But no, Arjuna doesn't need philosophy at this point. He needs practical advice, because the Brahmastra, with its fiery effulgence, is heading directly towards him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Know from me that this is the act of the son of Drona. He has thrown the hymns of the nuclear energy, the Brahmastra, and he does not know how to retract the glare. He has helplessly done this, being afraid of imminent death." O Arjuna, so what to do? It's infallible. It always hits who it's targeted towards. It's unstoppable. It must kill. And he can't even retract it. What will Krishna advise Arjuna? And he tells him, "Only another Brahmastra can counteract this weapon. Since you are expert in the military science, subdue this weapon's glare with the power of your own weapon." Sri Suta Goswami said, "Hearing this from the personality of Godhead, Arjuna touched water," he did Achman, "for purification, and after circumambulating Lord Sri Krishna, he cast his Brahmastra weapon to counteract the other one. When the rays of the two Brahmastras combined, a great circle of fire like the disk of the sun covered all outer space and the whole firmament of planets. All the population of the three worlds was scorched by the combined heat of the weapons. Everyone was reminded of the Samvartaka fire which takes place at the time of annihilation. Thus, seeing the disturbance of the general population and the imminent destruction of the planets, Arjuna at once retracted both Brahmastra weapons as Lord Sri Krishna desired." So one weapon was coming towards him and it could not be taken. So his weapon counteracted that weapon, combined with that weapon, and it was such an incredible fire. Then Arjuna withdrew his weapon, and that withdrew both of the weapons. And in that way, he was saved by the grace of his dear friend and chariot driver. But there was Asvatthama, helpless now. His horses were tired. His last weapon, his only powerful weapon, had been proved ineffectual for stopping his capture. And now Arjuna, his eyes blazing in anger like two red balls of copper. Why was he angry? Look what this man had done. He dexterously arrested the son of Gotami and bound him with ropes like an animal. Prabhupada's purport, we'll read some of that. Asvatthama's mother, Kripi, was born in the family of Gotama. The significant point in this sloka is that Asvatthama was caught and bound up with ropes like an animal. According to Sridhar Swami, Arjuna was obliged to catch the son of a brahmana like an animal as part of his duty, his dharma. This suggestion by Sridhar Swami is also confirmed in the latest statement of So he bound him up, he tied him. And after binding Asvatthama, Arjuna wanted to take him to the military camp because Draupadi and his brothers were there. The personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, looking on with his lotus eyes, spoke to angry Arjuna. So Krishna wanted him killed. He will speak now, telling Arjuna, giving so many reasons why this Asvatthama should be killed immediately. Why was Krishna angry? Because Arjuna was angry, and because someone had attacked the devotees and given pain to his devotees' family. So sometimes Krishna is compared to a kalpa vriksha tree. Because yeye tam mam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajamyaham. Because according to what you want, Krishna reciprocates with that. What a devotee wants, Krishna reciprocates with that. and fulfills the desires of a devotee. But actually the example is incomplete, because a kalpa vriksha tree, a wish-fulfilling tree, does not become angry at the enemies of his devotees. And there's a verse from the Mahabharata that describes this point. So Krishna becomes the enemy of those who become the enemy of his devotees. So therefore, although Krishna was angry also, as we'll hear by his words, his anger was of a different quality than Arjuna. Arjuna's eyes were reddish like copper. And Krishna had still lotus eyes to show that his anger is fully transcendental and an exhibition of his love for his devotees. But yet he did say, Krishna said, "O Arjuna, you should not show mercy by releasing this relative of our Brahmana, this Brahma Bandhu, for he has killed innocent boys in their sleep." A person who knows the principles of religion does not kill an enemy who is careless, intoxicated, insane, asleep, afraid, or devoid of his chariot. Nor does he kill a boy, a woman, a foolish creature, or a surrendered soul. Don't look what this man has done. Irreligious aggressor. Don't try to be don't be sentimental and overly merciful to him. You should kill him. A cruel and wretched person who maintains his existence at the cost of others' lives deserves to be killed for his own well-being. Otherwise, he will go down by his own actions. He will go to hell. Furthermore, I've personally heard you promise Draupadi that you would bring forth the head of this killer of her sons. He's giving many reasons why Arjuna should kill him immediately. This man is an assassin and murderer of your own family members. Not only that, but he has also dissatisfied his master, Duryodhana. He is but the burnt remnants of his family. Kill him immediately. Actually, Krishna is testing him to see how deeply Arjuna understands religious principles, because there are other issues. So Sutta Goswami continues, "Although Krishna, who was examining Arjuna in religion, encouraged Arjuna to kill the son of Dronacharya, Arjuna, a great soul, did not like the idea of killing him, although Asatam was a heinous murderer of Arjuna's family members." The second paragraph of Prabhupada's purport to text 40, Prabhupada explains the point a little more broadly. Lord Sri Krishna encouraged Arjuna outwardly just to test Arjuna's sense of duty. It is not that Arjuna was incomplete in the sense of his duty, nor was Lord Sri Krishna unaware of Arjuna's sense of duty. But Lord Sri Krishna put to test many of his pure devotees just to magnify the sense of duty. The gopis were put to such a test as well. Prahlad Maharaj was also put to such a test. All pure devotees come out successful in the respective tests by the Lord. So Krishna was doing something by his words. So Krishna told him to kill him immediately. Arjuna took this bound fellow, Asatthama, and brought him to the camp. So he brought him bound and cast him before Draupadi, his wife, who was lamenting for her murdered son. He was with his dear friend, Krishna. Srila Sutta Goswami said, "Draupadi then saw Aswatthama, who was bound with ropes like an animal and silent for having enacted the most inglorious murder. Due to her female nature and due to her being naturally good and well-behaved, she showed him due respect as a brahmana." So Prabhupada's purport criticizes showing those who are born as brahmanas but not acting on the level of brahmanas too much respect, because it's a very big issue for the preaching movement. So Prabhupada speaks on that point here in his purport. But yet Draupadi could not tolerate to see Aswatthama, even after what he had done, bound up and treated in that way. And being a devoted lady, this is text 43, she said, "Release him, for he is a Brahmana, our spiritual master." So there are verses over here, six verses or so, where Draupadi will speak reasons why he should be released. And each of those has a different, very good reason attached to them. I wonder if I don't think I brought it. Each of those verses has because of culture, because of kindness, because of duty, because of this, because of that. So many good reasons why Aswatthama, despite his horrible acts, should be released. Release him because he's a Brahmana, our spiritual master. It was by Dronacharya's mercy that you learned the military art of throwing arrows and the confidential art of controlling weapons. So he learned the Dhanurveda, Veda, the Veda from by which the art of shooting arrows in wonderful ways is explained. He learned that directly from the father of Aswatthama, Dronacharya. He, Dronacharya, is certainly still existing. He died in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, but he is certainly still existing, being represented by his son. So he's still here by his son. The son represents the father. So how could you kill your teacher? His wife Kripi did not undergo a sati with him because she had a son. Oh, most fortunate one who knows the principles of religion, it is not good for you to cause grief to glorious family members who are always respectable and worshipable. My lord, do not make the wife of Dronacharya cry like me. She had lost all her sons and she was crying, her heart broken. Don't make Kripi, Dronacharya's wife, cry also like me. I am aggrieved for the death of my sons. She need not cry constantly like I do, as I do. If the kingly administrative order, being unrestricted in sense control, offends the Brahmana order and enrages them, then the fire of that rage burns up the whole body of the royal family and brings grief upon all. So that was the end of the six reasons. Our family will be destroyed. The Brahmana is, because he's a Brahmana after all. They will be disturbed and their curse will burn our family up. Sutta Goswami said, "O Brahmanas, King Yudhisthira fully supported the statements of the queen." So Krishna has already committed himself on one side. Kill him. Draupadi says, "Release him." So many reasons. Yudhisthira fully supported the statements of the queen. He was Dharmaraj. He was the personification of goodness and religious principle. So he stood on that side. No, release him. Don't kill him. Because the statements of the queen were just in accordance with the principles of religion and were justified, glorious, full of mercy and equity, and without duplicity. I think these six are the reasons over here. They were according to the principles of, because she gives six verses. I think this is what it was, if I remember correctly. According to the principles of religion, they're justified, glorious, full of mercy and equity and without duplicity. So each one of her reasons that she gave represents one of those good qualities. So Yudhisthira, Draupadi, no, don't kill him. Nakul and Sahadev, the younger brothers of the king, and also Satyaki, Arjuna, and the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, son of Devaki, and the ladies and others were all unanimously agreed with the king. So everyone else more or less said, no, be merciful. And Krishna took that side also. We should be merciful to him. Nakul was famous for being wise, and Sahadev was famous for his being learned in astronomy and his swordsmanship. And he learned his swordsmanship from Dronacharya. How could he possibly kill the son of his teacher? Because every time he looked at Aswatthama, who would he see? He would see the face of Drona, his teacher. How could he do it? So Nakul Sahadev, don't kill him. All the ladies, don't kill him. Satyaki even, and Krishna, don't kill him.
Bhim, however, disagreed with them and recommended killing this culprit who in an angry mood had murdered sleeping children for no purpose and for neither his nor his master's interest.
Chatabhuja, because in this verse, in the 52, Nishamya bhima gaditam jopadadyas chatabhuja. Chatabhuja is Krishna, his forearm form. So Chatabhuja, the forearm one, or the personality of Godhead, after hearing the words of Bhima, Draupadi and others, saw the face of his dear friend Arjuna. Kill him, don't kill him, kill him, don't kill him. Krishna taking both sides. So Arjuna, perplexed what to do. So Krishna was driving the chariot of Arjuna. Krishna gave Arjuna the advice that would save his life. And now, a family quarrel is breaking out. And Krishna is going to solve that too. And to make sure it doesn't break out in a heavy way, he becomes Chaturbhuja, and Prabhupada explains that in his purport. Lord Sri Krishna had two arms, and why he is designated as forearm is explained by Sridhar Swami. Both Bhima and Draupadi held opposite views about killing Aswatthama. Bhima wanted him to be immediately killed, whereas Draupadi wanted to save him. We can imagine Bhima ready to kill while Draupadi is obstructing him, because she was also fiery. And in order to prevent both of them, the Lord discovered another two arms. Originally, the primeval Lord Sri Krishna displays only two arms, but in his Narayan feature, he exhibits four. In his Narayan feature, he resides with his devotees in the Vaikuntha planets, while in his original Sri Krishna feature, he resides in the Krishna Loka planet, far, far above the Vaikuntha planets in the spiritual sky. Therefore, if Sri Krishna is called Chaturbhuja, there is no contradiction. If need be, he can display hundreds of arms, as he exhibited in his Vishwarup shown to Arjuna. Therefore, one who can display hundreds and thousands of arms can also manifest four whenever needed. So if we need the help of a forearm lord, and we are his devotees, he will come in that form. When Arjuna was perplexed about what to do with Aswatthama, Lord Sri Krishna, as the very dear friend of Arjuna, voluntarily took up the matter just to make a solution, and he was smiling also. So Krishna, who had taken both sides, kill him, don't kill him, now he will speak. He says, a friend of a Brahmana is not to be killed. Don't kill him. But if he is an aggressor, he must be killed. Kill him. All these rulings are in the scriptures. And you should act accordingly. You have to follow Shastra. You have to fulfill your promise to your wife. You told her you would kill him. And you must also act for the satisfaction of Bhimasena and me. You must kill him. But you must not kill him. Simultaneously. Kill him and don't kill him simultaneously. Just then, Arjuna could understand the motive of the Lord by his equivocal orders on both sides. And thus, with his sword, he severed both the hair and jewel from the head of Aswatthama. How could anyone perform contradictory orders. Stay in this room. No one leave. Everyone go out. Everyone get out immediately. Everyone stay here. Your head will swim and spin if you try to do both. You can't. Contradictory orders of different persons are impossible to carry out. Therefore, a compromise was selected by Arjuna by his sharp intelligence, and he separated the jewel from the head of Aswatthama. This was as good as cutting off his head, and yet his life was saved for all practical purposes. Here, Aswatthama is indicated as twice born. Certainly he was twice born, but he fell down from his position, and therefore he was properly punished. So Krishna created an impossible situation for Arjuna. And then he solved that impossible situation by inspiring Arjuna from within how to kill him and not kill him simultaneously. So he, Aswatthama, had already lost his bodily luster due to his infanticide, and now, moreover, having lost the jewel from his head, he lost even more strength. Thus he was unbound and driven out of the camp. Insulted, humiliated, head shaved. He was a Kshatriya, and Kshatriyas, they have their long hair and their mustache. So they insulted him, shaved him out, threw him out. And in this way, they killed his sense of pride. He had acted as a Kshatriya, of course, he was a Brahmana. And then, almost as a conclusion, text 57, cutting the hair from his head, depriving him of his wealth, and driving him from his residence are the prescribed punishments for the relative of a Brahmana. There is no injunction for killing the body. Thereafter, the sons of Pandu and Draupadi, overwhelmed with grief, performed the proper rituals for the dead bodies of their relatives. So Krishna is introducing himself in a wonderful way, solving all the problems of his dear devotees, all powerful, able to do everything, serving his devotees, becoming the enemy of his devotees' enemies. So we should become devotees. I'll just read this. It's not too long, but it's very interesting. Srila Jiva Goswami's comment from Bhagavat Sandarbha, Anuchet 47, on verse 1725, where Srila Swami had, that was Arjuna's words, saying the reason why Krishna actually came was not to pritranaya sadunam vinashaya chadaskri. He can do that in other ways, just by willing it, but to show special mercy and associate with his friends, his devotees, he comes. Jiva Goswami says, he explains this verse's meaning as follows. O Lord, just as you have formerly appeared as the Purusha avatars in other incarnations, you have now appeared, tatayam avatara, in your original form as Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You have appeared in order to remove the burden of the earth planet, Bhuvi Bhara Jihya Saya, who is your great devotee, the earth is your great devotee, and to enable your devotees to constantly relish the happiness of worshipping you and meditating on you, Anudhyayana. Srila Jiva Goswami then poses a question. Krishna must take birth in the material world to give happiness to his devotees. He cannot avoid adventing himself. Does this conflict with his complete independence? If he has to come to give happiness to his devotees, that means he has to come. And if he has to do something, then is he completely independent? Because someone who is independent, by definition, has to do nothing. He does what he wants to do. So Srila Jiva Goswami poses that question. He then replies, so he says, does this conflict with his independence? He then replies, this is not a fact. Krishna is not forced to do anything. He is free and independent. His independence is described in the Narayana Samhita.
Quote, the independent personality of Godhead is full of transcendental bliss. How is it possible to say that he needs anything or is forced to do anything? It is not possible. Srila Jiva Goswami continues, as far as his appearing in this world to give happiness to the pure devotees, Ananya Bhavanam, is concerned, Srila Jiva Goswami says, this does not detract from his independence. He comes because he is merciful to his devotees. He is free from all faults. And because lack of mercy is a fault, he is free from all mercilessness. Anyway, he has plenty of mercy, and he doesn't have the fault of mercilessness. Yes. So he's full of mercy. So free from that fault, he is very merciful to his pure devotees. And he voluntarily appears before them to give them transcendental happiness. One may say that his supreme independence and his mercy contradict each other, and his mercy detracts somewhat from his independence. Actually, he is both independent and merciful. Both qualities exist in the Lord, even though they may sometimes contradict each other. So he's forced in one sense to be merciful because the devotees pull that mercy from his heart. But that's actually not forced, that's his free will. It's a product of his independent free will, his loving nature. The Korma Purana, Srila Jiva Goswami continues, explains the mutually contradictory qualities of the Lord in the following words. The Supreme Personality of Godhead possesses mutually contradictory qualities. So yes, he is so great that those qualities both are within him. And they are reconciled in him. His all-mercifulness doesn't conflict with his full independence, although he possesses both qualities. So that was Jiva Goswami's comment on that verse. How did he counteract the Brahmastras in the Mahabharata?
No, that's not the question.
Oh.
The question is,
no, I know that, but that's some information. I'd like some clarity. According to what I understood, you said, that in the battle of Kurukshetra, so many Brahmastras were thrown at them at Arjuna, and Arjuna counteracted those.
By his own Brahmastra. Most of the time it was by his own Brahmastra. That was always the case.
Okay.
So, and he just did it, you know, by his training or acharya and his own intelligence.
This time it appears that he didn't know what it was. He didn't recognize that the Brahmastra was what it was coming towards him. That's what it appears from the verse. Because he's saying, what is this fiery effulgence heading towards me? That's what it appears. There may be other answers, but that's what it appears from the verse.
At that time, Arjuna had not ascertained that it was indeed a Brahmastra.
Well, that's what it appears from the verse. Yes. So anyway, the verse. Let's wait one second. The verse itself, the English translation, is, O Lord of Lords, how is it that this dangerous effulgence is spreading all around? So he saw a very powerful effulgence spreading towards him. And he's saying, how is it spreading here? What's happening? Where does it come from? So he was clearly, this is text 26, is clearly, by one reason or another, either by the way that Aswatthama has thrown it, or by maybe he's also thrown a loss of memory weapon with it, I don't know. So he's saying, where does it come from? He's not clear who that
the son of Dronacharya has thrown it. I do not understand it. So he clearly doesn't understand what's going on, according to his own words in the Bhagavatam. And I personally don't know any more than that. Anyway, is that what they say? They say Savadan? Be careful. Yes. Such spirit. Okay, another comment on this one? Okay, is this... I don't think we're going to be able to do better than that.
Pretty good so far.
Yes. But this is Krishna personally. He does that through Vishnu. His Vishnu forms. But Krishna personally, when he comes... It's really, of course, all the different incarnations are within Krishna, but through the incarnations, Krishna does the pritranaya sadhanam vinasya chaduskinam, especially the reestablishment of the principles of religion. But Krishna personally, his only business is exchanging love with his devotees. So that's what we see here, Krishna exchanging love with his devotees. That's all that's happening. It's coming in the form of saving Arjuna's life, but actually all that's happening is he's exchanging rasa with his dear, dear friend Arjuna. It's coming in the form of him, Bhima wants to kill him, Aswatthama, and Draupadi says no, spare him, and Krishna's saying, he's standing in between them. What's really happening is just Krishna exchanging rasa with his devotees. That's all that's going on. Yeah. Yeah, and Krishna protects again. Oh, that's, wait till we hear it in the next paragraph. And not only that, interestingly enough, what happens to Aswatthama? This heinous, terrible, horrible person who's done the most horrible things to Krishna's devotees. What happens to him? He performs austerities. He lives and is still living. He performs austerities, and due to the purity he attains, who does he become in the next time? Vyasadev.
In the next one.
Yeah, that's so. I once said to a devotee, why Krishna has done this peculiar twist and everything? He becomes Vyasadev. So is that encouraging? Okay.
But
he becomes Vyasadev. That one. So is that encouraging or discouraging? Well, on one hand we say, why didn't Krishna kill him? But this is actually very encouraging, because in the Vaishnava philosophy there's no eternal damnation. That even if someone does something bad, horrible, the result can be wonderful in the end. There is hope for us. Yes. Mrs. Nair. Yes. But Mr. Nair is another thing. What Prabhupada said about him. Prabhupada said he was in New Zealand when Prabhupada found out that Mr. Nair had died. He was in New Zealand. And he happened to be wearing a t-shirt that had Lodna Sringadev on it. And when he heard the news, one of the devotees brought him the news. Prabhupada said, oh, Hare Krishna. Turn the microphone off, please. We turn this off for this one. And he said, I should not have prayed for him to die, because I am a saintly person. But what could I do? He was so offensive.
My hair is standing on end.
very heavy. And then later on, he wrote a letter. He was talking, there was some split within ISKCON amongst the devotees, and Prabhupada said, and everyone will go back to Godhead. And this one will go back to Godhead on this side, and this one will go back to Godhead on this side, and this one will go back to Godhead. And everyone will go back to Godhead except Mr. Nair. But anyway, we're sure there's some mercy waiting for him. Huh? Oh, he did so many things. He did. And there's this, also a wonderful pastime where this Prabhu who comes, Mr. Sethi, I can't remember his first name, who comes every year from Bombay. Yes, he comes. And this Mr. Nair had brought, he had hired these gundas, and then he got the police and everyone to try to break down the temple, and they were ripping it apart. And this one, Matihili Mataji, does she come now and then? Yeah. She came, and she was holding on to the deities to protect them. How Prabhupada and Krishna will reciprocate with this Mataji, I don't know. She was holding on to the deities, and these policemen were trying to rip down and she was trying to protect the deities. And they were pulling her by her hair, such inhumanness, what to speak of culturedness. And then there was and they got an order, and they somehow or another they stopped it. And then the devotees did something very wonderful, and they went to the court and they protected the deities. So they had to, this was done on a Friday or something like that, and by Monday they had to rebuild the temple before Monday. So Prabhupada got this Mr. Sethi, who was a building constructor, to build it, a devotee. He was a devotee, very good devotee. To rebuild it, he said, he and his men will build it before Monday. So Mr. Nair came and talked to this man. And he said, I'm going to come with my men. I'm coming with so many gundas, and we're going to wreck everything. And he came to the site while the construction was going on. And Mr. Sethi has a son whose name is Brij Mohan. Such an exciting story. And he said, when Mr. Nair came to him and said that, he said, Brij Mohan, bring my shotgun. You're going to come. Okay, bring my shotgun. We'll see. So how Krishna will reciprocate with these wonderful devotees? How Prabhupada touched the hearts of these people too? So one has to be very, very bold one has to have such faith in Krishna. So deep, it's not superficial. Any other questions, comments? Yeah. Yes. Yeah, this is a good time. Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. A little louder, please. 40. Yes. Duty, just like Mataji was saying, the sense of duty and the sense of devotion. Devotional duty, service to Guru and Krishna. So when, say if you have something that you're attached to, and you even see this with a small child, if you try to pull it from them, from their hand, you're holding on to it, what does the child do naturally? Because they're attached to it. They hold on still tighter. So that's the ultimate effect of it. Their sense and feeling and devotion tightens and gets stronger. Their grip to Krishna and their service to Krishna gets stronger and stronger and stronger. So it's magnified in that sense.
So their sense of duty, their sense of devotion, or you could say their dutiful devotion, or their devotion, it magnifies their devotion, actually. That's my, how I would comment on that. Sometimes you don't know how much you're attached to something until it seems like you're going to lose it. Then you realize it's everything to you. Any other questions or comments? Last one, because it's just time to go. Too late. Yes. Yes. Holding them apart. Because it says something, it hints at something like that. Not that they were going to fit, Bhima was going to, you know, but to what? Keep it separate. What was the, there's something, there was a word that Prabhupada used. He wanted to kill him. To stop him. She was standing in front like that. Okay. Hare Krishna. Kal. Well, that's how he withdrew it. No, but how else? If he only withdrew his, then only his would have been withdrawn. But he withdrew both by withdrawing his. They met together, and there was a double, more glaring effulgence. So they, you could say, became one. And then he withdrew his, and they both were withdrawn. Yes. They were both one at that time. The description is more like they became one. But also, you have to understand, this is not my field. I never studied it. But it seemed to me clear that, you know, it went like this, like there's water coming here, and then whoa.
This is made by Krishna's chastisement. Krishna's taking both sides.
This is who you're dealing with.
Later on.
And you have to satisfy me and Bhima too.
Is it because of this Bhakta Vatsala approach that he changes his mood? And he arrested him, he told him, kill him. And then when Yudhisthira and Draupadi said, no, you shouldn't be the son of a Brahmana.
No, but at the end he said, you have to satisfy me and Bhima. He put himself with Bhima at the end also.
No.
It's all in rasa.
He's
showing that he's neutral. Neutral usually means you're not on either side, but Krishna's neutral on both sides here. Now, his point was that if you would have done the job right in the beginning, there wouldn't have been a second Brahmastra and a throne to give Parikshit Maharaj, unborn Parikshit, to kill him and to kill the Pandavas. We'll hear about that tomorrow. Actually, we'll hear about that tomorrow. We'll hear about it tomorrow, not now. Hare Krishna. As much as I'm capable. We'll speak. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. The unbelievably wonderful Sri Krishna ki jai. It's all rasa. Yes, and then still Krishna allows him to become Vyasadeva after.
Where does it say that he became Vyasadeva?
You find it. Don't make me do that.
It came